Welcome to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm Jen Godet, your fearless host, entrepreneur, investor, and business strategist. Why are we here? Because iron sharpens iron. And when we bring industry leaders and entrepreneurs and investors to share about what's working in business and maybe even some of what's not, we all learn and grow. As a result, our businesses grow, and the ripple effect impacts not only ourselves, our teams, and our families, but also our communities and our world. You guys buckle up and get ready because we're gonna talk all things exit before and after the good, the bad, and the ugly. Everyone glamorizes the exit, but let's get real. Sometimes the check clears and you're still left holding the mess. What happens when the dream deal starts feeling amazing and then ends up feeling a little more like a nightmare? I have an amazing entrepreneur who's been through a couple of different exits, and she's seen it in a bunch of different looks. Carrie Peters, co-founder of Health Coach Institute, has had not one, but two exits. One was exceptionally positive, one wasn't quite so smooth. So today, we're gonna pull back the curtain on what really happens before and after you sell. Carrie, I'm really excited to be here for you to be here. You're a serial entrepreneur. You're now helping entrepreneurs and founders walk through this exit so they don't make the same have the same challenges maybe that you have faced in the past. And so they're really prepared. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. This is such an important conversation because there's so many things to know about preparing for an exit, going through an exit, and life after exit.
Oh, and we're going to dive into all the nitty-gritty. So let's start with this. You've been through one that went really, really amazing, and then one that was a little more complicated. What did the term sheets not prepare you for the second time around?
Well, first of all, I would just say that only 18% of companies are ever successfully acquired or sold. That's a small number. But it's important to think about acquisition or selling because it's another way to generate wealth from your business. So even if, before I first sold a business, I didn't even think I could. It's like, what? It's not even sellable, but it was. I just didn't know. And it's worth thinking about, even if you're not sure if you're going to sell or if you can sell, because preparing to sell or treating your business as like you're about to sell will help you make more revenue, have smoother operations in the meantime, but it gives you options in the future because it would be a real bummer to put your blood, sweat, and tears into this asset and then not see anything at the end of it. That would be
You're
really
absolutely
sad.
right. And Carrie, a lot of times founders, like they have these weird ideas about an exit. They think that an exit means they don't get to keep going. They think it's a final, like it's an act of finality. But in truth, some exits are really just more so that you can continue to grow. And it's like sometimes you're partnering with capital, so you have more runway. Can you talk a little bit about like sort of that myth and that misconception and sort of demystify that a little bit?
Yeah, I've seen it happen any number of ways where, and I've been on the buy side and the sell side, where a founder wants to be acquired but wants to continue on with the company. They just want the resources of the larger company so that they have more runway, they can grow, there's more opportunity. And then I've experienced where other founders are like, you know what, we're good to walk away. So please take our asset and grow it. And then we are going to go off into the sunset. So it can be either one and anything in between.
And so I want you to like think about that first one because it's scary. It's scary when you do it the first time a little bit. It's exciting, but there's a lot that are sort of unknowns. So when you look back at that first time that you were considering exit, what are the questions you should have asked before you moved through? Even though it went well, like what are the things that you learned along the way that you're like, wow, I should have thought about this before?
Well, first of all, let me just say I was a total bootstrap entrepreneur. I had no business background at all. And with a business partner, ended up growing our first business to, I don't know, it was a $10 million revenue aggregate business, which was stunning and shocking to me and amazing and learned a lot along the way. So, and selling, like I say, was something I didn't even think we could do. So when we started into that process, there was so much that I didn't know. And that's actually why I love helping other people because I was in the same boat. And there's so much to learn. One thing, if I could go back, you always ask for more. Always, always ask for more. Always. But also making sure that your vision and the buyer's vision are aligned in terms of the future of the company, and that that alignment shows up in a P&L. So you're agreeing on the revenue growth, on ad costs, perhaps, on percentage of revenue that goes to overhead, et cetera, et cetera. So there's everyone's in alignment, and there are no surprises later, or as few as you can possibly plan for ahead of time.
Yeah, you know, I've worked with several companies. I helped them grow. I've helped on the buy side and on the sales side. And the biggest surprises that I've seen, and I would love to hear your take on this, is on the founders who are continuing to ride along with the company. And they don't really consult employment law in any way, shape, and form. So they kind of have a miss on the earnout or on the employee side, because once you do that, if you're no longer a majority partner, you're, for all intents and purposes, an employee of the new organization. And so they sort of miss thinking about that and getting that contractually in their favor on the other side. And it impacts the asset, the amount of money that they get in the long run, because they didn't consider that. Have you seen that or encountered that? Are there some deal structures that looked great, but maybe that you've seen that have ended up creating problems later on?
Well, I think it's incredibly important to invest in employment law. And even if it's expensive to get that agreement, there's so much money at stake that it's absolutely worth the investment, and you have to be protected, because you are, in fact, an employee of the buyer's company. And who knows what can happen at that point. So you have to make sure that you're protected in all kinds of ways. The first time we were acquired, I did not do that because we merged into a new company. So I was an owner. I wasn't an employee. The second acquisition, I was an employee. I did have an employment agreement, which was turned out to be very useful and needed. As far as deal structures, again, it comes down to making sure that the buyer and the seller are in alignment about the future direction of the company, where it's going to go, the role that you're going to play in it. If you're the acquirer, you're being acquired, and now you're going to be an employee in the new company, so that everybody's clear, like, what role do we want you to play, and you agree on that. That's really important. And as far as deal structures, you know, they just vary depending on the industry, depending on the business. Maybe it's an all cash, maybe it's all equity, maybe there's an earnout component, maybe there's a combination of all of that. So it's going to depend. I just think if there is an earnout component, that alignment is so important, because if the person being acquired has an earnout, but the buyer is taking operational action that negatively impacts the earnout, then the person acquired is not incentivized to be in alignment with the buying company because they're losing financially. So there, you have to make sure that if there is an earnout in place, that both parties win and both parties agree on what needs to happen in order to hit those targets, and both are in it to win it, like are saying, like, we are here to partner with you, we're ready, we're going to hit these targets, it's going to be great.
Yeah, and have that all in writing too. I mean, that's a protection thing. So thank you for sharing this. And I want to ask a little bit more, because a lot of times what I have seen, and where I've had to do a lot of education, is founders, like, when we're entrepreneurs, we're great at growing a business, building a business, being in the weeds. Our first exit, maybe our second and third even, we need a little bit of outside guidance, because we have to do due diligence on the company acquiring, especially if we're rolling up a portion of equity. And the miss that I see a lot is not doing the proper due diligence on the structure that's acquiring us when we're part of that, like when we're the one being bought out. And so do you have any, like, one or two key questions that help you determine, yes, I do want my money to ride alongside with this, I do believe in this in that way, that would sort of expose that alignment or miss on the alignment so that we can walk away before it's too late?
Well, first of all, this is not a practical or logical, but you get to trust your gut. If you get a bad feeling, there's a reason. If you get a good feeling, there's a reason. Also, you really do need to see that alignment in writing and to see what the financial projections are and the plans. Sometimes it's hard to do due diligence if it's a privately owned company. Maybe all you can find out is information about somebody on LinkedIn. If you're able to meet with them in person, the more time you're able to spend, the more conversations you're able to have. About challenging things, about details, about what's going to happen in the future, trying to understand what somebody's character is, if there's integrity there, if there's a value fit and a value match, if there's a cultural fit mm-hmm. and a cultural match between the buyer and acquirer. These are the things that are going to be important and tell you whether or not you want to go forward or walk away. I think Absolutely. It's also important, in the actual after the term sheet, in the due diligence process, you're going to see a lot. You're going to start to see more true colors, and they're either going to be great looking or not so great looking. But that's another place where you want to trust your gut. And ideally you have optionality. And if something isn't feeling right in the due diligence process, or you're feeling like there's a lack of integrity or character, you have the option to walk away. That's the best case scenario.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We are running really close to where we have to take a brief break, folks, but I really want to emphasize what Carrie said. She said something, break bread with these people, have multiple conversations and put the stress on them, because people act differently when they're under duress than when they're when everything's going smoothly. So don't be afraid to poke at it and cause a stressful situation just to see how it is handled and to make sure that you're still aligned in integrity and that action comes from that above the line. We're going to take a really brief break. However, we're going to dive in after how Carrie has navigated the post-exit situation when maybe some things didn't go according to what she expected or planned, and what founders can do to protect their peace, their reputation, and their next act. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. If you want more of what you're watching, stay connected to Power CEOs live or on demand anytime, anywhere on the Now Media TV app for iOS and Roku. You can also catch the podcast version at nowmedia.tv. But now, let's go beyond the champagne moment. We have sold our company. Woo! We're going to dive into what happens after when you're still tied to it and the direction isn't quite what you had in mind. Here's what no one tells you. The most painful part of an exit isn't letting go. It's actually staying on and watching it go in a direction other than what you anticipated. It's very hard. I've been on the other side of this. Carrie's been on the other side of this. And it's not really fun. And it's really challenging for many of our clients as well. But if your business takes a turn for the left after the sale and you're still involved, what do? Carrie Peters is here. We are going to get into the real and raw about what happens on that post-exit roller coaster and how to handle it when things go sideways. So Carrie, what are some of the first signs that we see when things are headed in a direction we didn't expect?
Well, first, I was struck when I went through the exits by the level of grief I felt mm-hmm. and the identity loss. That was so significant, and I didn't expect it. It was like, my baby, like this is the end of an era. This is the end of a chapter. This is what is supposed to happen. It's a good thing, but I was really struck by the level of emotion. And that's happening while you're navigating now, I'm an employee? Mm-hmm. Oh, here I am in this business that I created, but someone else is telling me what to do and how to run it and making decisions. And so you have this strange identity change happening, an enormous amount of emotion. And then people aren't making decisions the way you might have, right? I mean, after acquisitions, it's 70% of founders leave or are fired, right? Because it's challenging, but there are stories where founders stay on, and it's amazing. If you look at Bobbi Brown Makeup, for example, she stayed with her acquirer for 22 years. I'd say that worked out really well. And so it's not impossible that it can work out well, and it's okay if it doesn't work out well, because that's the numbers point to that, right? What are signs that things aren't going well? You know, ideally in your negotiations, you're setting 30, 60, 90-day goals, and there are certain milestones in place that are part of your employment agreement or your operational agreement or the direction that you think you're headed. And if you're starting to miss those early indicators, it's actually a great opportunity because you can see, all right, we're in a challenging situation. How does the leadership of the buying company handle it? How do I handle it? How are we communicating? Are we able to work together? Is it becoming difficult? Is there a sense that we're partners in this together? So those are all ways you can start to see, like, how's this going to go as a new marriage?
You know, and I'm gonna ask this because a lot of times I've seen this as well. You know, we're going through that grieving process, that change of identity. How much of this is a reflection? And how do we sort through this? Because one of the things that I have encountered is someone will come to me and they'll say, "Hey, I sort of feel powerless, but I'm also really struggling with getting up for the game because I'm not the driver anymore," so to speak. So how do we internally determine how much of this is an us thing and something that we have to do, and how much of this is the relationship and the communication that you just spoke of?
I mean, this is a great time to have a coach to sort through that, number one. And number two, I think you just have to honor and acknowledge this identity change is not small, it's massive. And there's going to be a recalibration period that's challenging, especially because if you're used to being the driver, you get your identity. I got my value or my worth. I achieve. I hit results. I make things happen. I do this. I do that. Oh, I'm not doing that anymore. Like, oh, okay. What am I doing? What is my value? How am I, proving that I'm worthwhile? But I built the company. It's a funny. A funny place to be. So it really is worthwhile having for outside eyes to help navigate that time period. So you can sort out what is my stuff? How am I going into meetings and discussions and challenges with the company that bought in a way that's more productive than less? How am I handling my emotions, my state, so that I can see with more objectivity what's happening in the business.
I love how you put that, and I couldn't agree more. I'm a huge fan of having, I actually am a fan of having multiple outside advisors through the process because everyone looks at it a little bit differently. And when we have that sort of personal board of advisors that might be our coaches, our mentors, and other consultants, it really helps us to sort of sort through that process. I had intended to go somewhere else with this, but I wanna go through the mindset shift because I think because you are a coach and you were my mentor for years, what mindset shifts had to happen for you during this process? Can you kind of share a little bit about what that mindset shift looks like when you re-step into your value and who you are in this new role? Like, what was that new mindset? What did that shift sort of look like? And what helped you process the loss and refocus your energy? I know coaching, but what other things did you lean on so that you could show up even while you were processing this?
Well, when I built our business originally, it was built as a personal brand. And the relationship between me and the audience and my co-founder and the audience and our clients was primary. And if they were choosing our school, a coaching school, for example, they're choosing because they trust us, they resonate with us, and that was what was primary. After the purchase, the right decision for the buyer was to move it to more of an institutional brand than a personal brand. And so, what I had to mourn and get right with is like that was the right decision for them. But so much of the grief for me was the loss of the connection with the students and the audience, because that's what lights me up. So, what I had to get help with is going, that's what lights me up. I won't be lit up by an institutional brand. And that's okay. That's the right decision for their business. And the right decision for me, is to have a connection between a founder and an audience. And that's where I'm going to shine. And really just accepting that that was what it is.
And so now you're helping other people through this journey. I think you've been helping them through this journey for a while as well. But when you see this on the other side, what does that look like for you? Does that still bring up some of those layers and of the onion, if you will, as you're moving through this with your clients?
Yes. It's an emotional roller coaster from preparing to sell, to selling, to life after selling, to potentially leaving the company that bought you. So the emotional piece of it, in my opinion, is actually more important to get help with in some way. You have to have help with the logistics, the numbers, all of that legally. But it's the quality of our decisions are based on the quality of our come from. Yeah. And if we are emotionally struggling with the roller coaster ride of it all, it affects the quality of our decisions. It can blow up deals. It can have a negative impact. And that's where I think I come in really handy for a lot of people, is to help hold steady and keep as much objectivity as possible while on the emotional roller coaster ride.
Yeah, you know, I love that you brought that to forefront. And I think that is really important. And I want to highlight that for those of you who are watching. If you're an entrepreneur, number one, you should always be preparing for an exit, because we don't even know. We may need to exit for a reason unforeseen. So it's always great to be prepared for an exit. But the identity shift, the grieving process is real. It can take a very long time. And it is absolutely essential to have a support structure, people who can hold that space for you and help you process through that. Because a lot of times, and I've seen a lot of founders who you become a funder after. A lot of people exit and they actually do not go with, and they now become investors. Well, there's a really dark period that they go through too, because of this identity shift. You go from being responsible for all of these lives, making this huge impact, and you think, woohoo, I've made it. And then the next day happens, you're like, well, shoot, what do I do now? So if you're watching, it's really important to have somebody before the exit to help you through this grieving process and to start exploring, well, what is that? What does that look like next? So Carrie, I mean, we celebrate exits like weddings, but sometimes they're like divorces. They're messy, they're emotional, they're filled with surprises, always good, bad, and the ugly. Thank you for keeping it real. How can viewers reach out to you to learn more, to engage with you as they move through their next transition?
You can find me on LinkedIn. That's the easiest place. I read all my direct messages, so please feel free to connect with me there. And just, you know, I think both you and I have a lot of love for entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship. It's so courageous. It's so brave. We are the people that are like making things happen and creating jobs and creating revenue. And the founder is the loneliest job. And it's never more lonely than when the stakes are incredibly, incredibly high. And so I'm excited that, Jen, there are people like you and me in the world to really help walk with the founder through these like absolute turning point moments.
Thank you so much, Carrie, for your wisdom. To my viewers, if you're charging and chasing down your next exit, remember, get your strategy tight, but get your mindset even tighter. Surround yourself by the right support structure, the right coaches, the right consultants in your corner that helps you to navigate not just the logistics and the financial piece, but also the emotional and the identity shift as well, so that you can be successful in all that you do. For more unfiltered truth from those who have lived it, join the Power CEOs Facebook group, subscribe to this podcast, share, and stay tuned right here. And we'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm your host, Jen Gode, and we are going to shift gears just slightly because we have been talking all things the emotions behind an exit, what to do after we exit when we're having all the feelings of grief and we still are an employee now in the new company. But we're going to now continue that conversation in a different light. Because everyone talks about exits like they're finish lines, but in reality, they're launch pads if you're financially literate enough to leverage it. So today, now, we're gonna dive into the real prep work behind successful exits, what capital partners actually care about, and why your pitch deck is just the beginning. I'm super excited to have with me today Candace Powell and Jackie Cooper, managing partners of The Brand Group, who have been on both sides of the table. They've been raising capital, they've been deploying capital. So let's get to know what they wish every founder knew. Ladies, thank you for being here and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us and for such a great intro.
Well, you know, everybody does talk about exits like it's a final thing, but not everybody hangs up the keys, and some founders then become investors. And you ladies really bridge that gap and are doing a lot of amazing stuff. So let's just go there. What is it that most entrepreneurs completely miss when they're preparing to raise capital or have an exit?
I think a lot of times we see founders spending a lot of time on their pitch deck, and the pitch deck is such a small piece of the overall pitch. So going so much further beyond just the pitch deck, raising capital is so far beyond just your pitch deck. And I think another thing people neglect to realize is their own network of fellow founders is a potential network of investors. We're seeing more and more of founder investments into fellow founders.
Yeah, I'm actually a part of that. So that's how I got started. And so let me ask you, when we're founders investing in other founders, what signals are smart investors looking for that never really show up in the deck? Because you said it's not about the deck. I agree with you, but what are the signals that the smartest investors are looking for?
I think a lot of times we look at character traits and personalities. We personally love resilience. And a lot of times that comes through a founder or an entrepreneur who is willing to talk about the times when things were not so sunny, the failures, you know, the horror stories, the times they've been bloodied. When someone wants to come to us and be really transparent about that and share that same story, that history with their investors, we actually love that.
Well, you know, we just talked about trust with another guest, and that's about trust, because our lives are not beautiful, sunny roses, especially as founders. Anybody who says that business is a walk in the park and there's never any negative is obviously lying to us. So I really can appreciate that. So now let's talk about the raising capital side, but maybe I want to raise capital because I'm looking at scale or growth. I'm not ready to exit. I want to continue to grow the business. What do I need to know as a founder so that I can protect the value of my future equity?
That's a great question. Jackie, I'll probably go back and forth on this because this is something we're really passionate about. So many founders are living in the day-to-day. They're so focused on what is happening. What's my crisis right now? What do I have to solve right now? And they're putting off a lot of the preparing for whatever the future of the business looks like, what their exit plan is. And that can be really detrimental, not only in the end, but should any liabilities come up, any lawsuits come up, you want to prepare for all of those instances in the beginning. And that's the very like not sexy part of starting and building your business. We really focus on that asset protection, founder protection, making sure that they're secure.
Absolutely. And I would add to that, we sanity check the job of raising capital a little bit, because a lot of founders, they're in one or two or three roles, right? They're wearing maybe three hats, and then they've got this team around them. And it depends what point they're at in their trajectory of their company, but a lot of them don't set expectations early that capital raise can be a full-time job. So it can get very, very messy, both from the aspects that Candace mentioned, like structure early to avoid mess later, both from that aspect and the amount of time, talent, resource that it takes to properly raise capital and safely raise capital. So I think managing those expectations early and really helping people understand how to approach it with a sane hat on is very helpful.
Wait, so you're telling me Instagram's lying and I can't just go out there and people will throw money at my business?
If they do, if people want to show up and throw money at your business, girl, take it.
I think due diligence still needs to happen there.
I think that is a misconception a lot of founders have. There's so many platforms out there right now, and this is where the pitch deck seems to be where they spend so much of their time, because they think if they get their pitch deck just loaded on any one of these sites that people are raising capital on, that the money is just going to like be thrown at them. And that's just not really the reality. It is an additional job. It's a full-time commitment to raise capital for your organization, for your business, for your dream. And it's really important to understand that before getting into it.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And as an investor, I can tell you, I get pitched 50, 60 times a week and I get cold pitched. Listen, folks, if you're watching this, listen to what these ladies are saying. Throwing a pitch deck in a social media message is not a way to build a relationship with money, nor is it okay to cold email someone with just a pitch deck. It's kind of like asking someone to marry you before you've even gone on a first date. So listen to what these ladies are saying. It's so incredibly important. And now I'm going to ask you, you've already said you look at resilience, that's something very important to you. What are the other non-negotiables that you look at when you're considering backing a founder?
Integrity. And that shows up in a lot of different ways. Coachability. I think we've seen some really large egos, and confidence is important, right? And if you've built something great, we understand the emotional connection to that. But being humble, being able to say, I need help, I want help, someone who's coachable and has a strong values, we're there for that all day. And you mentioned due diligence, Jen. It's interesting how open someone is to that due diligence process. It's often not the easiest. There can be a lot of data involved. There can be a lot of documents, a lot of questions, a lot of back and forth. So a certain degree of patience through that process, I think, is also very telling.
See, when the founder is holding everything a little too close, or they are the only one who will speak to us, they don't trust other team members to share information or open up, that's a red flag to me. Also, when they're not okay, this is one I kind of learned later on in investing, when they aren't okay saying, I don't know, or let me get back to you. It's almost a red flag when they have every possible answer. They're the solution to every possible thing. They're the smartest person in the room. They know all of it. They know every single piece. While you would think that's a level of preparedness, it's actually a red flag to me, because I really can't tell if they're being honest. It's okay to not know everything. That's why you surround yourself with really great team members. And I want to see those great team members highlighted and featured.
You know, I really resonate a lot with what you just said. I'm a business strategist and coach, and like, that's one of the things that I look for. If they're not coachable, like, I'm not going to waste my time or my team's time. But what you said just now is really important. And the reality is ego and that kind of a mentality kills deals. It literally has killed any deal that has not gone through on my end. It has been that one thing. And, you know, I think a lot of people, we're all happy in the beginning. I like to break bread with people and see how they treat other people at the table, the wait staff. I have on purpose, and I do this in hiring too, I've on purpose pulled the wait staff aside and said, please screw up this order. So that I can see how they respond, because that's really telling. And a lot of times you don't get that until you've had 7 or 8 conversations. So I really appreciate you sharing with that. And if you're watching this, It's okay to not know. It's okay if you're a founder and you grew a business and this is your first time working with capital and you read a couple of books or went to a guru. Guess what? You don't know everything. The process is a challenge. It is a process. Bring in the right consultants to help you along the way, but be okay with saying, you know what, I don't know that. And I'm going to give you an example of that. I was on stage last week and everybody billed me as the like AI expert. And I started with, listen, folks, like I'm not an expert. There's so much that I don't know. But what I do know is I've had multiple startups, I've had multiple success, and I've helped hundreds of companies to integrate the technology. So I know what works and I know what really doesn't. But I'm by no means an expert because every time you learn something, there's a whole bunch more. And I think that right there, that honest vulnerability when you're going through the process really helps on both sides, on the capital side as well as on the founding side, because capital maybe doesn't know the ins and outs of your exact industry or your operations. So it does go both ways. Thank you for sharing that. We do have to take a brief break, unfortunately, because this is just going so swimmingly, but you're going to want to stick around because what happens after the exit or when you're in the investor side of the table, after the break, we're going to explore that shift from founder to funder and how to avoid losing your wealth as fast as you made it. Right after these messages. Welcome back to Power CEOs, Truth Behind the Business. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to Power CEOs and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere, by downloading the Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS. On the move, you can also watch the podcast version right from our website at nowmedia.tv. But let's dive right back into our topic. Building a business takes vision. Keeping the wealth you earned from the sale or exit of your business, that takes a whole new level of financial literacy. So if you're post-exit or you're getting close to exit, you're about to enter the most important journey or the most important phase of your wealth journey. This is where founders either go broke or they become legacy builders. I'm really excited to be here talking with Candace and Jackie. They aren't just advisors. They're investors, they're strategists, they're seasoned guides for founders navigating that post-exit reinvention. So if you ever thought, what comes next and what do I do with all this? We are going to dive deep. So Candace and Jackie, I'm really excited that you're here to have the conversation. And before we dive into the how do we become investor side, I feel like we need to talk a little bit about financial hygiene. Because a lot of times I've seen deals fall apart, not because of a lack of potential, but because the books are a mess or, the founder wasn't really financially savvy. And so it really just kind of fell apart before we were able to close the deal. Can you share a little bit about what does a founder need to know? Share some of that insight for us so that it really highlights that journey towards funder.
It's a great question. It's very timely. I'm currently in one of an investment I made, still working on this. What I will say is if you have bad habits, money doesn't fix bad habits. So get your habits right. If your books are a mess, you've got to clean up your books. One, it's going to be really hard to get investors. This happened to be a friend deal and I broke my own rules. It was a handful of years ago and made the investment. And guess what? The investment didn't fix their books. The books are still messy and we're still having to muddle through this. Money does not fix bad habits. It's a human truth, right? So you got to get the right team in place. And honestly, we talked about learning from, learning from our experiences, learning from our failures. This investment is still going strong, but boy, I learned so much from it. And one of the key things that I really, really pay attention to is team. It's okay if that's not in your wheelhouse. That's okay if that's not your area of expertise. You better have team members who it is their area of expertise. And they better be able to show that they can keep the business on the right track. And it's got to be from the beginning. You've really got to stay hyper-focused on that.
Oh, I agree. And so now let's shift that to the, I call it the post-exit fog. What's the biggest mistake that founders are making right after they sell? And how can someone set themselves up before the exit to avoid some of that post-exit fog?
I think there's two simultaneous paths after the exit, after the in the exit fog, two things that are happening. One, the myth or the misconception that money makes everything perfect, right? I had a big exit, I got all this money, like, woo, I'm done. There's a lot to do yet after you receive your exit funds, including, you know, manage, build, maintain that wealth for generations to come, or whatever it is. And the second thing is, I think, emotional preparedness or lack thereof. So one, the misconception that money fixes everything and now you're done. And two, great, I'm exited. I just move into the future without any emotional preparedness. No, you've had a significant event that for most people really can adversely impact their identity if they're not prepared. So in advance of that exit, have a plan for your money afterwards and have a plan for your emotional and mental health afterwards.
We talked a lot about that earlier today with our prior guest because it is so true. And I've had people on, they go to a really deep, dark place because we think it's about, oh yes, we've built, maybe we've built for 17 or 20 years and we pop the champagne. I just had a 9-figure exit. This should be amazing. And 2 days later, it's like the post-exit hangover. And it's not fun because now I'm not responsible for all the people. Like there's a huge thing in that transition. So we did dive really deep into that. Let's move that mindset now towards the planning for after from a financial standpoint, because this is not something that people talk about enough, quite frankly. So talk to me about that mindset shift that has to happen to go from building a business to evaluating one, because now instead of being a business operator, you're a capital allocator.
I think that's a really good segue, because I think for most founders I know aren't one-time founders. They're serial entrepreneurs. And shifting that into investing is a great way for them to continue that sense of purpose, right? In being a part of something, building something. Most founders I know don't necessarily start off with the only goal in mind being wildly wealthy and holding on to this wealth. It's certainly a component of it, but they definitely have other dreams and they like the grind. They like doing that. Start thinking of your investing as your new business. You really need to take it as seriously as you took your original first business that you found, right? You need to take it seriously. You need to take a critical and really find an approach and build a strategy around investing your capital. One of my basic rules, I have broken it, and every time I break it, it's just a lovely reminder to me again, don't break this rule. Invest in what you know. You need to understand what you're doing with your money. Everybody's got a great idea. Everybody. It's okay to pass on the unicorns because you didn't understand them. I'm totally fine passing on a unicorn because I didn't understand it. I have no experience in it. Invest in what you know and take it seriously.
You know, I will tell you, never break the rules that you set for yourself, because I have the same thing. And you were sharing earlier about an investment because you bent your rules for a friend. I've done the same thing. It never goes well, folks. If you have if you develop a strategy for your investment and you invest in what you know, and you have your investment criteria, do not veer from that. I don't care if they're your best friend. I don't care if they're your family. Like, always 100% of the time when we bend those rules, that's when we find ourselves in trouble or in messy situations. So thank you for sharing that. And what do you wish more first-time investors knew before jumping into a fund or a private equity deal? Because it's different. It's a different game than what they've been playing.
We've talked a lot about not only investing in what you know, but invest in what you value. And if you are talking with and kind of in community with people with shared values or like kind thinking, you're able to have deeper conversations, more meaningful conversations. And from there, I think you're better able to organically diligence deals. If you care about something, if you value something, your mindset going in is different when you're asking questions, when you're considering the investment, when you're putting your passion and care behind it. I think that changes the energy of the entire investment. And I think you're setting yourself up for likelihood of success.
So let's talk. Go ahead, Candace.
Sorry about that. I think you're totally right. And I think just to kind of tack on, you have to, yes, lead with your heart. You also have to recognize where you also, you could get yourself into trouble doing that. We touched on, obviously, helping a friend or doing a friends and family, being in a friends and family round. You also have to unlearn some bad habits. I think a lot of times, because we're founders, we've been the person who can fix everything. We're used to being the problem solver. That's not your job as an investor. Your job as the investor is not to fix the investment. And so, yes, you can bring value, but just, you know, you have to kind of unlearn some of those bad habits as well.
Oh, I agree with you fully, you know, and we're running towards the end of the show. So we're going to have to definitely have a follow-up conversation because I've got so much more to ask you. This is going so well. So I'm going to take a moment and say, listen, folks, if you're watching this, we have had pure gold all day today. But the big thing that I want you to take away is invest in what you know. Get the right advisors who's been there, who've done that, who can cut the time to success and learn from the wisdom of others who've had this lived experience, because we've been through it. We've all made these mistakes already. And that means that you don't have to if you have the right team. So Jackie and Candace, how can people reach out to you if they would like to learn more?
They can come to our website first and foremost. It's founders-office.com. And we've said on this show, we value the pitch deck. We don't want anyone thinking it's the end all be all to raising capital, but we do know that the pitch deck has a place in the formula. So if you would like to go to the website and upload your pitch deck, we offer complimentary discussion. We'll take a look at it. We'll hop on the phone with you. We'll talk through some ways you can maybe enhance it and talk about what role it plays in the grand scheme of things when raising capital.
Thank you so much. And if you folks do that and you get in touch with Jack and Candace, make sure you saw them. You let them know you saw them on Power CEOs. Jackie, Candace, thank you so much for sharing. We will for sure get you back in another time to continue this conversation, but thank you for your expertise.
Thanks for having us, Jen.
Thank you.
And you, yes, you, I'm talking to you now. You know that I am a coach at heart. And if we just watched for the past hour and don't start taking action on anything, then we're doing it wrong. We don't move forward. We don't create that momentum. So now is the time to decide what is one thing you heard today that you're going to take action on. Maybe it's popping over to Jackie and Candace's website and having your pitch deck evaluated. Maybe it's taking heed to some of the other conversations and fixing your books, or getting a good coach to help you through the emotional part of the transition. Whatever that action step is for you, I want you to do it today, not tomorrow, not next week, because then we've waited too long, but today, because when we take action, we shift that momentum forward and we're able to see that growth in our business, which of course impacts everyone else. So without further ado, unfortunately, all things do come to an end, including the show, but the good news is we'll be here same time, same station next week. So until then, win today, win this week, and I'll see you next time.